Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Our phones are down today, so you won't be able to call in, but that doesn't mean we don't have a very interesting topic. I'm talking today with Matt Rice. He is an undercover investigator. He works with them for a group called Mercy for Animal to expose animal cruelty at factory farms and slaughterhouses. We've all heard of the chickens, the pigs that can't turn around, that are placed in very small cages, that are fattened up for the kill. And, of course, there's also animal cruelty outside of the farm setting. All you have to do is watch those incredibly painful commercials to watch. I can't watch them. I fast forward or close my eyes where they show how dogs are mistreated, to know that animal cruelty is something that we have all over. But where is it occurring? Why is it occurring? And what can we do to stop it? To help answer those questions, I've invited Matt on the air. Matt, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So first of all, tell me what Mercy for Animals is and what you do there.
Sure. Mercy for Animals is an international nonprofit animal protection charity. We focus exclusively on farmed animal issues, and primarily by conducting undercover investigations at factory farms and slaughterhouses, and then using the evidence we gather from those investigations to educate the public about the plights of farmed animals, to work with some of the major meat producers and companies in the world to implement meaningful animal welfare policies to eliminate much of the suffering these animals endure, and to push for more and stronger laws to protect farmed animals.
Now, you go undercover. That means you pretend to be a farmhand and then you take some pictures?
Well, I don't personally. As the director of investigations, I work with our
undercover. You send people out to do that.
Yeah, who do that. And what they do is we ask them to, throughout the country in Canada and sometimes in other countries, go out and apply for jobs at these facilities. They use their real names, their real social security numbers, and they go to work and do their jobs exactly as described, while of course following all laws, and then simply use hidden cameras to document the conditions. And unfortunately, we've done more than 40 undercover investigations across the country in just the last few years, and every single time we've documented animal abuse that shocks and horrifies most people. Many of these have led to criminal prosecutions and convictions of workers and owners who are caught abusing animals, and also some of the largest food producers in the world to implement really important and meaningful animal welfare policies.
So your investigators, they may be told to abuse an animal. Those are orders they won't follow.
That's right, yeah. Of course, they're going to follow all of the laws and simply document what happens. But otherwise,
they might have to quit. If they're told to abuse an animal, they might have to quit to set, because obviously they're in it because they care about animals. They might have to quit there and then.
Yeah, and so, a lot of times that does happen, and we try to document that it is management actually instructing workers to, in some cases, break animals' tails in order to move them faster. They oftentimes get those. We'll usually try to, play dumb so that they can stick around and continue documenting and make sure that we get everyone who was involved in the animal abuse on tape so that they can be held accountable in a court of law. But absolutely, yeah, they would never actually participate in any type of illegal abuse while on the job. But try
so what are we talking about here? Cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys? Is that the main things we're talking about?
Yeah, our group focuses exclusively on farmed animals, so cows, pigs, chickens, and turkeys. And the reason for that is, 99 out of 100 animals abused at the hands of humans are farmed animals. And these are animals that typically have the least legal protection and the fewest advocates speaking out on their behalf. So we feel we can help the greatest number of animals by focusing exclusively on the animals who are raised and killed for food.
Tell me about some of the abuses that occur. You mentioned breaking an animal's tail to get them to move faster. Give me some other examples.
Yeah, we've done a number of investigations in the dairy industry and documented malicious animal abuse, workers stabbing animals, hitting them with crowbars.
Stabbing animals? Why would
them with screwdrivers and pins.
Sharp
objects.
Okay, we'll get to the other abuses in a second, but try to explain to me. I get it. We eat meat. I get it. These animals are slaughtered. Why would some farmhand stab an animal with a knife or a screwdriver? That just doesn't make logical sense. You're destroying your meat at the same time as you're being cruel.
Yeah, you have to realize that these are profit-driven industries, and they're pushing their workers to work even faster. And so when you're working in a dairy industry, for example, and if your job is to, as a pusher, they move the cows from the barns to the milking parlor 3 times a day on average. Their job is to move as many cows through that process as possible. And if the cows don't want to move or they slip on the filthy floor and go down and they have trouble getting up, oftentimes these workers will start kicking them, punching them, hitting them with chains, stabbing them with screwdrivers and other things, twisting their tails until it breaks, all in an effort to get the animals up and moving again, which, of course, is extreme animal abuse, but it stems from the fact that these workers are being pushed to move these animals as fast as possible through the system to maximize production and profits.
Give me some other examples. Some of the ones I remember recently, and I know there was a bill in New Jersey, where, as I recall, Governor Christie went the wrong way on, but where they caged these animals in some very, very tight caging. I think it was pregnant pigs, and they couldn't even turn around. Tell me what they're doing, why they're doing it, and why it's abuse.
Sure. So in addition to malicious abuse, where workers are actually punching and beating animals, there's what we call institutionalized forms of animal abuse. These are industry-approved practices. Like you said, extreme confinement of animals. The vast majority of breeding pigs in this country are kept in what are called gestation crates. These are tiny metal cages, barely larger than the animal's own bodies. They are never able to turn around or even lie down comfortably for nearly their entire lives. Egg-laying hens are kept in what are called battery cages. They'll shove 5 to 10 birds inside a cage the size of a filing cabinet drawer to spend her entire life. And a lot of people are familiar with veal crates. These are tiny wooden boxes in which they put baby cows, chain them by the neck so that they can't turn around, and let them basically sit there in misery for a few months, up to 6 months, unable to move, turn around, or lie down comfortably until they're finally slaughtered.
I would wonder if that affects the quality of the meat. I mean, clearly an animal confined in those conditions is not a happy animal, and I would think a happy animal doesn't eat proper. I mean, a happy human, if a human's depressed, if we're sad because our lives are miserable, we don't eat much, we might succumb to disease, right? If you don't take care of yourself because you don't give a damn if you live or die, then you're not going to take care of yourself. You might not eat. You might eat bad things. I guess they can't control that, but you might succumb to disease. Wouldn't it cause the meat to be worse?
It does. And as a matter of fact, these industries, though, have figured everything out in terms of what's going to affect the bottom line. And they know that they can maximize profits and minimize costs at the expense of animal welfare. So for the example with the egg industry, a lot of these chickens never actually end up in the human food supply. Once their egg production starts to slow down, they're usually put through a process called force molting, where they're actually starved for a period of about 2 weeks. That shocks their body into going into another laying cycle. At the end of that, they're ripped out of their cages, oftentimes gassed in gas carts, and then thrown into landfills to rot. Sometimes
thrown into landfills because the meat of that chicken isn't any good.
It's not considered valuable. And for every female egg-laying hen out there, there's a male chick who was killed as soon as he hatched at the hatchery. In fact, more than 250 million male chicks are killed every single year in this country alone.
Because nobody wants a non egg laying chick. They don't let it grow up.
Yeah, for the males, they'll never lay eggs, and the egg laying breeds don't grow fast enough to be raised profitably for meat. So the industry usually throws them into trash cans and allows them to suffocate to death, or grinds them up alive in giant macerating.
Grinds them up alive? Alive?
That's right. That's right. We actually did an undercover investigation at Highline Hatchery, the largest hatchery for egg-laying breed chickens in the world. It's in Iowa. And they were grinding up 150,000 male chicks every single day.
Alive?
Absolutely alive. as soon as they hatch, they
can't they give it some poison corn or something so they don't suffer the incredible pain of being chopped up alive? I mean, that seems really
gruesome. There is some efforts being made in Europe. In fact, Germany has committed to ending the practice of live grinding chicks through a process that's called in ovo sexing, where they actually can tell if the chicken is going to be male or female before they even hatch. And then they're able to dispose of the eggs before they're even born.
So yeah, chicken abortions, I guess, which is
that's right.
A lot better because it's an egg. It's a lot better than grinding a live chick alive. But let me ask you this: you mentioned that one of the things that you document is when these abusers break the law. Is it legal to grind a chick alive? Is that legal in America?
Unfortunately, it is. There are no
in all 50 laws. States.
In all 50 states, yeah, there are no federal laws that protect animals during their lives on the farm. And
I'm shocked that a liberal state like Vermont, which has lots of farms, and Bernie Sanders is their senator, a socialist, they don't have laws prohibiting farmers from grinding chicks alive?
Yeah, this is considered a standard industry practice, and most states have what are called common farming exemptions, which means if the farming industry says a practice is okay, no matter how cruel it is, it's automatically deemed legal. So these states have basically given the industry a free pass to determine what's cruel and what's not.
Matt, I have to take a break.
That's how these states get away with it.
When we come back, I want to go into Governor Chris Christie got, frankly, in some trouble, which is rare, for signing a bill. I believe it was on these cages for breeding pigs. And I want to talk about what happened to him politically and whether or not this kind of issue can win points for politicians, whether protecting animals is something humans actually care about. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Matt Rice. He is the Director of Investigations for Mercy for Animals. He sends undercover investigators to farms all across the country to uncover abuses, animal abuses, abuses of farm animals, cows, pigs, turkeys, chickens. Now, Matt, recently, I'd say maybe a month or two, maybe a little bit longer ago, Governor Chris Christie was... I believe he vetoed a bill to protect pigs or chickens. Remind me what happened here.
Yeah, that's right. The legislature overwhelmingly passed a bill to make it illegal to confine pigs in New Jersey to crates so small that they can't even turn around or lie down comfortably for nearly their entire life, which is actually the standard practice throughout the pork industry, but a practice that's been outlawed in California and some other states. And New Jersey was poised to be the 10th state to outlaw that practice.
And he vetoed the bill, even though my guess is that there are not a lot of pig farms in New Jersey. There probably are a lot in Iowa, where he's running for president. But I just don't think of New Jersey as the center of pig farms in America.
That's exactly right. There aren't very many pig farms in New Jersey. And really, Governor Christie was vetoed this at the behest of the Iowa pork industry, and you know, there's been speculation that it was in a bid to get support in Iowa for his presidential run, but it went against the will of his constituents. The vast majority of people in New Jersey wanted this bill to pass. The legislature, both the House and the Senate, passed it overwhelmingly. And then he went ahead and vetoed it against the will of his constituents to satisfy the Iowa pork industry.
How much extra would it cost to let pigs run free in a barnyard rather than confining them in these cages?
You know, there's different systems that can be used that would actually cost very little to the producers. That would improve the welfare of animals. And most consumers, if you do polls, say that they would be willing to pay a little bit more to ensure that animals are not being abused on these factory farms. And most people understand that if you confine an animal in a cage so small she can't even move for nearly her entire life, her muscles start to atrophy and waste away. She starts to go crazy from boredom and stress. That's animal abuse, and it's abuse that would land you in jail if you were to do it to a dog or a cat. This is the way the pork industry treats thousands of pigs in this country.
And how does that affect the meat? I mean, why do they do this?
Well, they do it to minimize production costs. It makes it a lot easier to ensure that the pigs eat their same amount of food, and it also makes it easier for them to monitor the pigs with fewer staff. So it's a money-saving scheme, basically. It also saves in space. If you can cram more animals into a smaller space, that also saves money. But it all comes at the expense of the animals.
Yeah, I guess say pigs are called pigs for a reason. I would think that a pig will eat as much as it can until it's no longer hungry, and that that's not a real issue with pigs if you treat them right.
What will happen in some poorly managed systems is some of the more aggressive sows may prevent the less aggressive sows from feeding. But there's ways around that, of course. And there are a number of producers in Europe particularly that are getting, you know, really good results without confining sows into these crates. But these are the breeding sows that we're talking about. They're the ones who are actually producing the piglets, who will by and large end up as pork or bacon on people's plates. So these sows are kept in a constant state of pregnancy inside these gestation crates. For a couple of weeks when they give birth, they're moved to what are called farrowing stalls, but then put back into crates, re-impregnated. Their piglets are taken away from them within just a few weeks. They have their tails cut off, they're castrated without painkillers, and then they're grown to about 5 or 6 months of age and then sent off to slaughter.
Well, 5, 6 months of age. Now, pigs can live, I don't know how long they can live, maybe you know, 10 years, right? I mean, a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are very young animals, and that's the way it is with throughout the entire farming industry. They're killing animals as soon as they reach adult size.
Because they only care about the size, obviously.
Right.
If they reach the size, and boom, their life's over.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, that's to maximize profit. So they don't want to feed the animals any longer or house them or, you know, make sure that they're in comfortable temperatures for any longer than is necessary to get the maximum amount of profit from their bodies.
Now, we're going to take a break soon, but when we come back, I want to talk about just sort of the issue of meat eating in general and my own, I got to be honest with you. I'm going to confess this right here on the air. Folks, I eat meat. I do. I don't feel good about it. I don't like killing animals. I don't think I've ever killed an animal knowingly. I may have killed a bug or two, but I've certainly never killed anything larger than an insect. Oh, I've gone fishing. All right. I admit it. I've killed some fish. But I don't enjoy. In fact, I don't even really fish very often. I don't enjoy killing fish, much less. I just can't see myself hunting and killing a live animal outside of the water. But I do eat it. I like hamburgers. I like steak. I like lamb. I'm not too big on pork products, so pigs, I think you're okay. I do like chicken, and I eat it. And I suspect that I'm not that different from the vast majority of Americans. I guess while I'm willing to accept that vegetarians are higher order moral beings than I am, I guess I'm willing to accept that because, what can I say? I like the taste of meat. When we come back, Matt, I want you to address my concerns and that of other guilt-ridden liberals like myself who recognize that animals have to die for me to get my meat, but I do like the taste. Help! Help me morally, Matt Price. Be right back after this. Levine. My guest is Matt Rice. He is the director of undercover investigations for Mercy for Animals. Prior to the break, I had a confession to make. I confess to Matt Rice that I am a carnivore. I am not a vegetarian. I eat chicken. I eat beef. I do. I like the taste of hamburger. I hate, as a good liberal, I honestly hate the fact that animals have to be slaughtered for my meal, but I do eat anyway. I feel really guilty about it, as all good liberals do, but Matt, I don't know, can you do anything to salve my conscience? Am I just a bad person?
I wouldn't say you're a bad person. You know, I grew up eating meat. I like the taste of meat. I think most people did. But there is, of course, the moral dilemma. You ask anybody, and everyone agrees, except for maybe sadists, that causing others to suffer needlessly is wrong. And when we look at farmed animals, we know these are others. They have their own personalities and feelings and thoughts, and they suffer when we raise and kill them for food. And it's needless suffering because we do have alternatives. People can thrive on vegetarian diets. There are millions of people in America and across the world that are doing quite well without eating any animal products whatsoever. But it is, you know, it's culturally ingrained. It's something that we grew up with. And so as an organization, of course, we say one of the best ways to help farmed animals is to simply stop eating them. But that's a big step for a lot of people, so we also encourage people to simply cut back on their meat consumption by doing things like having a meatless Monday or reducing the amount of chicken that they eat. So, for example, it takes 200 individual chickens to equal the same amount of meat from a single cow. So simply by cutting chicken out of your diet, you are saving a lot of animals from needless misery and suffering, even if you're not really ready to give up meat just yet. Mercy for Animals also has a website, chooseveg.com, with lots of great tasting recipes and tips on how to make that transition to cutting out or cutting back on meat.
Matt, is there such a thing as humane slaughter? I know, for example, that the kosher laws, the Jewish kosher laws, at least the way I was taught, is that you have to kill an animal so that it feels no pain. And in fact, the kosher butcher would hit the – there's a certain nerve in the neck that, at least I was taught, kills instantly. And if you kill an animal in that way, yeah, the animal dies, and that's not very happy for the animal. But there is no pain, no suffering. Is there such a thing as humane slaughter?
I think that that's an oxymoron. I don't think there's any way to honestly say that killing somebody who doesn't want to die can ever be considered humane. And, of course, there are producers that do things better than others. And we encourage these major companies to implement policies to eliminate some of the worst forms of abuse. But anytime somebody's having their throat cut open and they're hung upside down to slowly bleed to death, that's causing those animals to suffer, just as much as it would our dogs or cats. We always say, you know, if you wouldn't want somebody to cut your dog open and eat their flesh, how can you justify paying somebody to do that to a cow or a pig or a chicken? But again, this is a tradition that, you know, we as Americans have lived with our entire lives for generations.
Human
so it's
beings,
not something to give
probably.
Up easily, and we understand that. But there are a lot of
let me ask you this.
Yeah,
if we've had to do this, if a dog is sick and is in pain and is even a dog,
yeah.
a loved family pet is suffering, then people will put their dogs, cats, their pets to sleep. And that means, in effect, giving them some kind of injection that they
sure.
can barely feel that does kill them. And the argument is, and again, most pet owners have done this, that it's better than the pain from the actual disease, the terminal disease that the animal is facing.
Absolutely.
I assume you have no problem with that kind of killing.
Sure, and certainly there's a difference between euthanasia, which is offering somebody a painless death rather than a long, prolonged, suffering death. But we're talking about animals who are sick or injured or are nearing the end of their lifespan or suffering from old age. Those aren't the types of animals who we would want entering our food supply anyway.
Right.
Diseased animals, animals who are so old, their muscles are wasting away. So in the industry, we're always talking about healthy or ideally anyway, healthy young animals who are being killed. And they're being killed in some of the most horrific ways imaginable, especially in the poultry industry, which comprises 95% of the animals raised and killed for food in this country. These animals, if you watch our investigations at mercyforanimals.org, are literally tortured to death by the billions in this country. It's one of the major welfare programs we're working on now is to change the poultry slaughter system and make sure that they're included in the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, which right now they're excluded from that only legal protection that farmed animals get at slaughter.
How are they tortured?
Well, the standard way of killing poultry in this country is to rip them out of their transport cages, shackle them upside down into metal shackles. Their bodies are then dragged through an electrified vat of water, which painfully shocks them, but doesn't necessarily render them unconscious. Then their throats are cut open by a blade. Those who are shackled improperly, though, miss the blade and often end up being scalded alive in hot water feather removal tanks. In fact, the USDA estimates that that happens to almost a million birds every single year in this country who are scalded alive at the slaughterhouse. So this is a long, prolonged, agonizing death for animals. And we slaughter 8.7 billion chickens every single year in this country. So, and in ways that would be illegal if even one cow or pig were the victim instead.
So you mentioned the humane methods of slaughter. I guess my question originally to you this segment was, is there such a thing as humane slaughter? And you said there wasn't. But I think even you have to accept that there are more humane methods of slaughter than other methods of slaughter.
I would say less cruel.
Again, less cruel. We won't use the word humane. Okay, that's fine. I don't mean to play semantics with you. Okay, less cruel. What are some of the less cruel ways animals can be killed?
Well, in the poultry industry, as we were talking about before, what we're pushing Tyson Foods, which is the largest poultry producer in the country and many other poultry producers, is to move to controlled atmosphere killing systems. So in these systems, it eliminates the need to shackle, shock, and cut the throats of live animals. The animals are kept in their transport crates and loaded into chambers that are then slowly introduced with non-poisonous inert gases that slowly put the animals to sleep. And then once they're unconscious, they expire from asphyxiation. So they still die, but all of the studies show that it's a painless death for them. So that would eliminate a lot of the suffering, and it also eliminate a lot of the human handling. And in our undercover investigations, that's where a lot of this abuse happens, where these desensitized workers take their frustrations out on animals. We've seen workers using chickens as punching bags, sexually abusing animals, other horrific abuses. But if we can eliminate the human handling of these live animals at the slaughterhouse, that would also eliminate a lot of their needless suffering.
Now, is this inert gas asphyxiation, is this something that there are large poultry producers that do in Europe, Japan, or United States, or is this...
It's more widely used in Europe, and in fact, in the UK, in the next couple of months, almost every major poultry producer will be using these systems. It's something that we're pushing for to be used here in the U.S. and in Canada, and right now only, I think, two smaller producers are using these controlled atmosphere systems. So there's a long ways to go, and that's one of our major campaigns right now, is to convince Tyson to implement these new less cruel slaughter systems.
How much more expensive is it to be less cruel?
Well, it does cost a little bit for these systems that we're talking about to change out the systems that they have and put in place new systems. But all of the studies that have looked at this show that these industries can actually recoup their costs within a few years because there's less meat wastage and spoilage with these systems.
Really? So in the long run, they're actually cheaper?
That's right.
That's very interesting. Matt, got to take one more break. When we come back, I want to talk about how cows are slaughtered, how beef is made. Is that the word I'm looking for? In America, and what we can do to help cows live better lives. If you ever looked into a sad eye of a calf, I don't know, but I like my hamburger. I'm just tortured, I guess. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I guess I have a tortured conscience, which is not near as bad as the torture that occurs every day to American farm animals, whether they be beef cattle or pigs or chicken or turkeys. My guest is Matt Rice. He is the director of undercover investigations for Mercy for Animals. He's the guy who sends people into the field to capture some of these abuses on camera. In fact, Matt, what's interesting to me is that some of the reaction to what you do is good, in the sense that laws are passed to treat animals better. But some reaction actually is to prevent you, to make it illegal for you to do the filming. In other words, they know that people will be upset by what you show, so they just want to ban not the practice, but the filming of it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. They're known as ag-gag laws, and a handful
ag-gag
of states have passed them.
agriculture gag, ag gag laws. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
And really, they're just thinly veiled attempts by factory farming interests to sweep evidence of animal cruelty and other problems like environmental contamination, health and safety problems, to sweep these problems under the rug and shield animal abusers from criminal liability. And they stem from the successes we've had with these undercover investigations exposing criminal animal abuse and resulting in convictions of workers and managers and owners of these companies, not to mention a black eye in the public, you know, in the media, when the media gets a hold of it. So rather than strengthen laws to protect farmed animals, some pro-factory farm legislators in some states have worked to pass laws to ban the filming of anything happening at an agricultural facility, or other types of ag gag laws that are specifically designed to criminalize undercover investigations.
How is that legal? Because if the people are committing crimes, it seems to me that making it illegal to film a crime itself might be illegal under the First Amendment or some other body of law that says, I would think you have a right to film criminal behavior. I mean, if a police officer is beating up or killing someone unlawfully, we've stopped a lot of that abuse by filming it. Could the police officer then point his gun at me and say, don't film this? I don't think he legally can do that. How can they make it illegal to film a crime being committed?
Well, you're absolutely right. These laws are blatantly unconstitutional. And the vast majority of states that had these bills proposed, actually, they were defeated on the grounds that they were unconstitutional. But a handful of states did pass them. And this year in Idaho, a federal judge struck down the ag gag law, saying it clearly violated the First Amendment and was unconstitutional.
I'm glad to hear that. So what are, I mean, you described some pretty awful things that are legal. I'm shocked still, reeling from the fact that you can kill baby chicks in all 50 states. I guess I'm not surprised it occurs in Texas, but that in all 50 states you can kill them alive, that's still just those images are reeling in my head. Tell me this, what is illegal? What is so far gone that it actually breaks criminal law?
Yeah, it depends on the state because, again, there are no federal laws that address animal abuse at factory farms at all. And so on the farm, we're looking at state laws, and state laws differ by the state. But typically, it's any type of practice or incident that even the agriculture industry isn't going to defend. So when we document workers taking baseball bats or spiked clubs and beating animals to death, usually the factory farming industry won't defend that practice, and therefore it won't fall under the common farming exemption statute. And we can go to law enforcement and have those prosecuted. So really it's the most egregious, malicious types of sadistic abuse that rise to the level of criminal animal abuse when we're talking about farmed animals. Whereas the institutionalized forms of animal abuse, confining animals in cages so small they can't turn around, mutilating them without painkillers, grinding up male chickens in macerating machines, these are considered standard industry practices and are typically deemed legal in most states.
So you say they're legal because they're considered common farm methods. Is this part of the common law? Is it just something that has been accepted over time? Or is this put in the law somewhere saying you can do anything that's sort of common farm methods?
No, these are put in the law, and this is specifically the factory farming industry has a considerable amount of political power and lobbying power in this country. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and so whenever there's a law passed to say, you know, you can't beat your dog or other types of abuse for companion animals, they'll go in and specifically say this doesn't apply to cows, pigs, chickens, or other farmed animals, or other similar types of language that specifically exclude the animals who are raised and killed for food, which gives these farmers carte blanche to do almost anything that they want as long as they can point to the fact that it's common. It's commonly done on farms.
So what state's the worst? What state has the least protection? Is there any state where they can do anything?
You know, I would say Iowa is the worst. We've done a number of investigations there, documented some of the most sickening animal abuse that you can even imagine. Iowa has the least legal protection for farmed animals, and Iowa has also passed an ag gag law that makes it illegal for someone to what this is a little misleading, because what it says is that you can't make a false statement on a job application at a active factory farm. But what this allows the industry to do is to put on
keep out your investigators and say, have you ever been hired by an animal cruelty organization or something like that?
And in some cases, at some of the farms that have these applications, they'll say, are you in any way affiliated with an animal protection group? And so if you say yes, they don't hire you. And if you say no, then you've violated the ag gag law.
So one of the things I find interesting is obviously Iowa is the first caucus state. It probably is that for random reasons, but it is and has been for many, many decades now. And we've seen, I don't know how many debates, I'm losing count already, but I can't recall a single question about animal cruelty. Has there been one? Did I miss it?
No, I haven't seen one either. And I think that shows that we need more dialogue on this topic, which was why I appreciate you having me on the show today. One of our main efforts is to try to create that dialogue through mainstream media exposure, but we also have social media as well, and we're reaching millions of people through Facebook and Twitter and other social media outlets. And I think that the opinions are changing. If you look at recent polls nationally, the vast majority, 95 to 97% of Americans agree that even if animals are raised and killed for food, they should be protected from needless cruelty and violence.
No, wait. So 95% of Americans say that even if animals are raised for food, they should be protected from needless cruelty.
You can't get that many Americans to agree on anything else.
Well, now, when you say needless cruelty, I wonder if you phrased it differently and you said cruelty to shave a few pennies off the cost of the meat. I'd just be curious to know. I mean, I would think it would go down. It might go down to 80%, but
Well, and these polls are they're different ones that word them differently, but the overwhelming response is that people think that animals deserve protection from cruelty and violence.
So how come we don't see more laws then? I mean, if this is a popular issue, is this an issue that can actually win elections? I'm going to be a delegate to the Virginia State House. I begin in January. And I represent a very liberal district, to be fair, where people care a lot about animals. But if I were running in a purple district, a close case, and my opponent had voted against laws to stop these chicken crates and so forth, do you think this is an issue that can actually win elections for people?
I think it depends on where you're at. So there's two sides of it. On one side, you have the vast majority of people that think animals should be protected legally. And then you have these very powerful industries with a lot of money and political influence. So, you know, it depends on whether or not you can get elected through popular majority or whether or not you need these campaign contributions from these industries in order to get elected. And
so the obvious answer is for people to join together and fund politicians who strongly oppose animal cruelty and to help compete, just like Mayor Bloomberg is doing against the NRA. You need a anti-animal cruelty lobby, something. I got to have a much better phrase than that, because that doesn't
That's
roll
true.
Off the tongue. Is there a name for the anti-animal cruelty lobby?
Well, there's a League of Humane Voters, which does scorecards on
League of Humane Voters.
Politicians. Yeah, and there are other groups. But one of the problems is in this country, there's limits on the lobbying that nonprofit charities can do. So our group, for example, is a nonprofit charity. Has a very strict limit on the amount of lobbying that we're able to.
Which is really ironic. Here, these for-profit corporations are lobbying to pad their bottom line. That's okay. But if you're lobbying because you believe in a higher good, in a higher cause, you're lobbying for humane treatment rather than to pad your own pockets. That's prohibited. It's legal to do it for bribery purposes. It's not legal to do it because you actually care about an ideal. That seems to me a little backwards.
It is backwards, and it's undemocratic, in my opinion. And that needs to be changed as well.
Well, Matt Rice, I'm afraid our hour has flown by. I really appreciate your coming on the Inside Scoop and sharing your thoughts with us. Where can they find more about Mercy for Animals? Got a website real quick?
Yeah, our website is mercyforanimals.org.
Mercyforanimals.org. MercyforAnimals.org. Thank you, Matt Rice, for coming on the Inside Scoop. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.